Hello, everybody, and welcome to Just NAS Science Podcast, where each episode we find the worst science-related posts on social media and get just a little salty about them. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Nick. And with each episode, we have three goals. The first is to promote higher thinking, the second is to educate, and the third is to make you laugh. This is a comedy podcast, after all.
Real quick, though, you guys ever sit there and wonder what we look like?
Or want to interact with us in real time?
Or just support us in other ways?
Well, then come check out our Twitch page at twitch.tv/justnasscience, where we live stream talks about science, life, and even show you the science behind cooking.
This week's episode, we hear from a science teacher in Mississippi, Timothy Tanner, who talks to us about some of the challenges about teaching science in the Bible Belt. In some ways, he fosters student curiosity. On the side, Tim is involved in local film production and wants everyone to check out an upcoming film called Texas Red that is set to air on either Video On Demand or Amazon Prime in 2021. We have the IMDb page in the show notes and on our website. I am very excited to get to talk to you today. First time that we're talking to another teacher in the country. Everyone's always science with Nick and can jive with Nick. So I'm really hoping to have a good interview with you. In terms
wow, I feel
of
like
education.
That was really like a personal attack.
It was.
Well, I'm excited to be here, y'all. I appreciate it.
Awesome. So have you been teaching the whole time down in Mississippi?
Yeah, actually, this will be my 5.5 years. I taught for about half a year, several years ago, my first go teaching, and just quit because it was just a whole lot for a new teacher. But yeah, I've born and raised and been teaching here in Mississippi. So, you know, I've met teachers from other states and stuff, but as far as really having an understanding of teaching outside of Mississippi, I'm still kind of, you know, Mississippi centric.
Nice. All right. So tell us, in terms of teaching in Mississippi, how would you describe that to somebody who's listening, maybe from New York or even in, we have a big audience in the UK. How do you think you might differ from someone teaching elsewhere?
Unfortunately, we kind of get this, even internationally, I had a friend that did a documentary, I don't think that ever got off the floor, but it was about the international sort of stigma around Mississippi. It's something that's, you know, stateside and all over the world, that Mississippi is just essentially a bunch of dum-dums. But, you know, we have a lot of students that just kind of, you know, feel sort of about, you know, blah about that, you know, from Mississippi or whatever. But as far as teaching is concerned, over the past, especially over the past, I'd say 3 or 4 years, I've seen a huge shift from the good old boy kind of, you know, thing to a more mainstream next generation science standards. A real push for that, which has been surprising for me, because growing up in Mississippi, I know that I felt like I've missed out on a bunch, or it seems like I have. I think that where it differs is we have a lot of clash with, and mostly the Southern Baptist Convention. And so we have a lot of our schools that, you know, the separation of church and state, and I'm doing air quotes here, but a lot of them are run by the Southern Baptist Convention. You know, when you really get to the tippy top in a lot of the school districts, you'll find that the head person, man or woman, is heavily involved in church. And so it takes a lot of the stuff that we try to do in science and makes it taboo when it shouldn't be. So really having to push through those boundaries and just kind of over-explaining everything, it's kind of tough, because students just immediately turn off to things like evolution or even some topics in genetics. It's like, are you playing God, or what does that mean? And I think it's just a lot of hurdles we have to jump over.
Yeah, that was definitely one of my questions I had in mind, is about like who your administration is or the curriculum creators. And it's really interesting to know that a lot of them are really tied to that like Baptist community.
It is. It's actually kind of scary, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I'd imagine they don't have the most respect, or I'd say understanding of science.
Not really. And respect, that's a great word, because no, they do not. And so it seems a lot of times like the narrow-mindedness really hinders. And really, if you think about it, as a teacher, yeah, I've got to go through some hurdles and stuff, but it ultimately trickles down to the students.
Is there anything you're not allowed to teach?
As far as I know, no. Because we have had evolution, and there is sex ed, and I guess you could say some of the other stuff that's kind of crossing the line or whatever, sex ed and things like that. And a lot of the teachers, the veteran teachers, have taught stuff that I haven't taught. So as far as, you know, getting sort of a backlash from students and or administration, I haven't received any. And our new curriculum actually involves evolution, so it's kind of unavoidable. And but I myself have not been told I can't teach anything, but I have heard kind of horror stories in some of the smaller schools and communities where teachers were basically told that you don't teach this.
I've heard about teachers in like Tennessee being fired for teaching evolution or like forbidden topics. So you just wonder, I don't know state by state how it differs.
Well, I haven't heard of anybody getting fired for it, but I've definitely heard about people, you know, having the administrator come to them and basically say, you know, let's back off of this. And most of the time that administrator is somebody who has a background in, you know, PE or library science or something that does not equivalent their understanding of science at all.
Now, would you say that over the past few years that you've seen an improvement in the students and the parents' attitudes towards being taught topics like evolution and sex ed?
I think that really when we changed the curriculum, because we had the same curriculum for like 10 years and it did not include a lot of evolutionary stuff. It kind of touched on it. But over the past, I'd say probably the past 3 years or so, I've seen more of an openness to it, but there's still some resistance there. And you have a handful of parents and even teachers and students that, you know, we get on that the topic of evolution. You know, I didn't come from a monkey. That's not what God says and all this sort of stuff. And so I kind of understand that, because I did grow up Southern Baptist, which is something that I no longer, you know, practice or anything. But I can understand where they're coming from. But even growing up, I don't remember us really talking about evolution, so I don't really have a frame of reference. But as far as sex education now, I think they actually teach it in middle school, if I'm not mistaken.
What are some of like the crazier things you've had kids say to you when you start to talk about evolution?
Oh, goodness. One is, you know, I don't believe that we came from monkeys. That's the whole thing. And I think it's just that misunderstanding of what common ancestry actually means. Mm-hmm. And I hate that. I hate the whole, you know, and a lot of times I try to beat them at their game. So I address a lot of issues up front, such as that really annoying picture that has like the ape that's kind of walking on its knuckles and then goes up to, you know, one that's standing up. And eventually we get to, for whatever reason, a very white Homo sapiens standing there holding a spear or, you know, bow and arrow or something. You know, I show them that and tell them this is not how evolution works. Evolution does not always follow this path that's, you know, straightforward and things like that. And one of the things that I've actually found that has helped out a lot is Neil Shubin's Urine or Fish. Because for whatever reason, if you start talking about fish and talk about, you know, proteins being the same in a fish as in a human. For whatever reason, that kind of breaks down some of the barriers. I don't think I've ever heard a student say, I didn't come from no fish, but I'm sure it's coming. I expose them to that pretty much every year because I love the book, and I love, you know, he had a PBS program for a while, and I have the first episode, and it sort of breaks it down, and it's fun and kind of silly. And so a lot of the resistance comes from, you know, am I going in or am I trying to teach the students that God doesn't exist or that he is not the creator? And it's really not, doesn't have anything to do with that. And so I think that they come in with, that's what, you know, evolution, and that's what, you know, Mr. Tanner is trying to do, but I'm not. And the one thing that has always kind of surprised me is that, you know, a lot of people don't realize, or maybe they just didn't remember, that Charles Darwin was a devout Catholic. So, I mean, I remember I talked to a teacher here in Mississippi. She said she'd been teaching for like 20-something years, and she couldn't stand the new standards because they just focused so much on evolution. And so I was trying to stifle my vomit, you know, while I was and she just goes on and on about how she, you know, Jesus, God, and the Bible and everything. And I said, well, you realize that he was a devout Catholic, right? And in fact, the church paid for the voyage and all this. And he was, you know, he had a degree in theology. So he did not go out to destroy Christianity. Quite the opposite. And I really don't understand the disconnect. Why can't we do both? Why can't you be a believer and also, I'm not going to say believe in evolution because you don't believe in it.
Right.
You know, and understand, also feel comfortable learning about it, because it was a huge learning curve for me when I got in college. My first 2 years of college was playing catch up because of how little the Mississippi educational system actually catered towards anyone at all from, you know, probably the 70s to the early 2000s, which I graduated in 2004. Of course, it's not like that now. What you learn, they just wanted you to get in and get out. Shut up. Don't cause any problems, you know.
There are some definite telltale signs there that you're a good teacher. You know, you're already going in knowing there's going to be some, like, common misconceptions and knowing that you're going to have to address those up front. You know, it's definitely always a good thing to kind of look up what common misconceptions are on a topic before you dive into it. You know I like to... I try to structure my units with like some sort of like anchoring phenomenon, right? Some phenomenon to focus the unit around. Like for my weather unit, because I teach earth science right now, even though I have a biology background. So this has been fun. it's like, what does it take to have a snow day in New York City? And so that question kind of guides us through the whole weather unit, learning about dew point and, you know, any precipitation, everything, right? We keep coming back to that question. But when I first introduce it, I kind of allow students to ask their own questions about it, any kind of misconceptions they have, and that stuff tends to arise through the questions that they bring up the first day or two. And then on top of the common misconceptions I found online, you know, I understand like each class's misconceptions, because sometimes they do vary from class to class. But yeah, so that's really great that you understand, like, you're going to have to kind of battle this out and sort of like work around it before you even get to the topic, kind of shut them down a little bit. So,
And I like your approach too. I try to do something similar, like give them something that's real life, that's not just from a textbook or something abstract, something that they can kind of anchor to. And then we'll get into the weird stuff, you know, or right. I try to go for like the weirdest thing. Like, you know, if we're talking about evolution, then I'll go look up, you know, I'll do a slideshow about the blobfish or something, you know, it's like, what in the world, you know, just to try to get them, you know, immediately interested. And students are just interested in marine biology just in general. So I can usually rope them in with that, and get their attention. And it's also a great way to kind of tiptoe into evolution. Because there's so many weird fish and creatures in the ocean and such. So.
I'm not going to let Lauren hijack this whole episode. I'm going to get some shit in here, too. This is bullshit. Do you, in the communities in your area, do they have a real trust for scientists and doctors, or do they often not, do they often try to avoid going or listening to what medical and health professionals recommend?
I think a lot of here where I live in Natchez, Mississippi, so it's, we're right by Louisiana. And so they like to call this place the Little Easy because we're like just a little bit older than New Orleans. And so a lot of the stuff around here is like New Orleans and things like that. But despite the, despite all that, I feel like we're a relatively progressive community. I don't get a lot of, it's kind of weird. There are sort of small groups of folks that kind of, you can tell, are hesitant to believe everything, especially with, you know, the coronavirus and things like that. There's a lot of, I guess you could say, speculation, like they want to believe and they will go to the doctor, but at the same time, there's this weird sort of almost superstitious type stuff that people will cling to, as opposed to really listening to, say, our mayor or our finally our governor, who decided to take things serious and realize that it is a serious issue. But I think a lot of the community around here try to be more progressive because, and I hate to say it like this, but there's a lot of elderly people here in our community, but there's also a lot of folks like my age that are, and my wife's age, that, you know, 30s, 40s, that are more progressive, grew up here, want things to change. That's one reason why I like living here so much. But as opposed to, you know, I grew up in Southeast Mississippi, over closer to Alabama, and it is not as open-minded over there. Yeah, I really wish, like, now I feel very foolish to say it, but there are some very, like I said, almost superstitious type stuff that students have told me that they would do instead of going to the doctor, or, you know, just very odd things that they do that's supposed to prevent them from getting sick or prevent them from doing this or that. And it's just, I mean, I grew up in the sticks. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I grew up in the sticks. I ran around in the woods and barefooted and all this. And even I haven't heard some of this stuff. That's the fun part about being a teacher, is that you can plan all you want, but when you get there, you know, back when we were in school where we could be close to students.
Right.
But when you get there, you never know what's going to come out of their mouth. You never know what question they're going to ask. And for whatever reason, because I'm the biology teacher, they come to me with just the weirdest stuff. I had a student show up one morning who, I can't even remember what happened, but he took his shoe off and his toe was like inflamed and just, I mean, it was the grossest thing that I've seen in quite a while.
So
a few years back, and he's asking me what he should do and stuff. And I'm like, you need to go to the doctor. That does not, I don't know what to tell you, man. That does not look good. So eventually I did get my administrator to like call his parents. And so it was just a really bad infection, but I'm like, what did he expect me to do? Write your prescription? Yeah. I don't know, but it's funny that, you know, students really like, they trust teachers to a certain extent like that. And then sometimes they'll ask me a question. I feel like, are you testing me? You know, like, are you trying to, you trying to see if you trust me or whatever? So it's kind of fun. Well, not when they're showing me really gross things, but, it's kind of fun that you get these questions and sort of get to know, kind of peek into what their brain is sort of putting together, all of these things that are very scientific, but they just don't have a foundation in science. So they can't really put it through the scientific lens. They don't have anything to, sort of base it on. So they have these very strange understandings of things.
Yeah. I get a lot, like, that used to come up a lot when I did teach bio, when we did the reproduction unit and like how you get pregnant. And oh, yeah. I used to have girls call me over all the time to like personally ask me questions. And it was clear they were asking because, you know, of what they've done and based on experience. And I would just be like, you know, try to maintain like a straight face. And I, you know, I don't want to ever like have an emotion that shows like I'm judging or surprised or, But yeah, they will ask you some wild questions that I never, ever even thought to think about. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, as we mentioned, there needs to be a uterus lining that the zygote like attaches to. So no, if there's sperm on the floor, a baby cannot appear from that pile of sperm on the floor. Yeah, so you're good. Don't worry about that.
Like, wait, well, you never told me that.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a rough one. I was like, what?
I remember, I think it was a couple of years ago when we were doing DNA extraction from, it was either a strawberry or a banana. I can't remember.
Ooh, yeah, I love that one.
But, you know, somebody made the joke that it looked like semen. And until that moment, I had never really, I don't know if I was just like in science mode or something, but I had never considered that. I'm sitting here and I'm like, all right, the experiment's over. Like, I don't know where to go from there. You know, the way the student said it, he's like, well, mine don't look like this or something like that. And I'm just like, wait, what? And then it dawned on me what the hell he was saying. And I was like, okay, we're done.
Yeah. I know. Sometimes you don't have nothing. You can't even have a comeback. It's just like, oh my God.
Wow. Was that a pun?
No, it was not. Stop.
Nice. But yeah, it's pretty fun being the science teacher sometimes. And sometimes you kind of wonder, it makes you wonder about the parents, like what they're actually telling them. And a lot of times it may not even be the parents. It may be some crap they hear online, which is equally as annoying. Yeah.
Well, I think part of the problem is nomenclature, right? Just how we will say things colloquially. Oh, I'm not going to say that word on air because I can't. I always have trouble saying just – I think part of the problem is how we describe things just in everyday life. You know, someone says, oh, there's a baby in their tummy. Well, it's not really in your stomach. Like it would be dead. So the idea that kids grow up hearing that because parents want to shelter them from clinical terms. Who wants to tell a 2-year-old there's a fetus growing in my uterus? Like nobody's going to say that.
Right.
So they grow up hearing this and then it sticks with them. Like, oh, babies are in the tummy.
Yeah, right. But let me tell you something, that sticks with them, and then you have to like disprove that when
they
get to
high
school.
Sticks with them.
I know, I'm just saying, like, you would think maybe by the time they get into high school, they would be like, oh, that was nonsense, but no, that really stays with them. As crazy as it may seem to us, it's like you have to like break down those walls before you could build it back up with like the right information.
Yeah, exactly. And to be honest with you, I mean, like, I guess maybe growing up here in Mississippi, I'm not sure. We didn't have sex education when I grew up. We had health class, and I remember it was taught by a coach who basically just sat at his desk, and we sat in there. I think I read the entire Lord of the Rings trilogy in that class because we never did anything. I think one time he stood up and basically said, don't have sex, and then sat down because
That's just like in, like, was it Mean Girls?
I was just going to say that.
Where the gym teacher was like, if you have sex, you're going to get chlamydia and die. And you're like,
yeah. Oh. He starts to spell chlamydia wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would too. I'm a terrible speller.
Oh, me too. I tell the kids, I'm like, listen, one thing you got to know about me, I didn't read enough as a child, so I'm a terrible speller. So don't judge me.
I have struggled with spelling my whole life, but I think that helps students, you know, like if you say, well, you know, I'm not always right, or I, you know, I can't spell. It lets them realize, hey, this guy's a, you know, a human being.
Right.
Because when I was going to school, it's like you don't question a teacher, or they're like supposed to be like the all-knowing whatever, and that just isn't so. But yeah, I think when it comes to that kind of stuff with the baby in the belly and all that, trying to that was me growing up. You know, like I never heard the word vagina until I was in, I think, seventh grade, and our penis. And, you know, it was always something like, I don't even remember the little colloquial saying, or did I say that word right? that we used for, you know, no-no parts or whatever. And so, you know, I had to learn all that stuff on my own.
Even in New York City, I had to learn that kind of stuff on my own for the most part. Like we also had health in high school, and it was more focused on like hygiene than anything else.
Right.
And it took you had it for one semester, and it took place of your, I think of your gym or something like that.
Yeah. And it was taught by a gym teacher.
Which,
usually.
Why?
I know.
By the way. Anyway. But, you know, I wasn't getting that stuff at home. Like, my mom was so afraid of us learning about sex that even if we were in the car listening to the radio and someone said something about having sex or being naked or something, my mom would instantly change the song, even though we had already heard it at that point.
We did an episode a little while back about how little men and even women know about female anatomy. So a lot of women don't even know what's going on down there and like different parts of reproduction and stuff. Like, I always think back to this tweet I saw about someone saying, how come women never have to take a DNA test to see if it's their child? And it's like, whoa, I don't even know where to start with that. You know, like there's such a disconnect and misunderstanding that like, I don't even know what to tell this person.
Yeah, that reminds me of something that was floating around. My students asked me, you probably heard this too, but they were like, why is the ocean salty? And I was like, well, you know, minerals from the earth. They're like, no. It's because whales actually ejaculate 40 gallons. And it's like, what the So that's why the ocean is salty. Okay.
Is that why I like the taste of salt water so much?
Yeah, apparently might also like whales. I mean, if you're interested, that's a huge part of them. Like literally huge. You start talking about penises of other animals and things like that. So I don't know. I think sometimes students just want to try to like corner me or something, but I just don't care. Like I'll be like, all right, let's talk about that. That's not right. Nope. Or either I just go, you know, ask your mama or ask your dad, or, you know, please leave my room. I'm going to write you up if it's too offensive.
Yeah. They definitely like the shock value.
Yeah. But I've gotten to the point now, like when I first started teaching, I was very, I guess you could say I was more conservative, not like in beliefs or whatever, but in the way that I let run my classroom. Like I was basically like, you know, you're going to do this, whatever. And I've gotten way more lax and putting technology and stuff in the classroom and just doing research and doing my master's work and everything. That's really like letting kids say stuff like that. That's really how they learn, to be honest with you. Like, right. You know, that's, I love the idea of being able to set up a, or tell them, sometimes I don't even set it up. I just tell, you know, give them a very vague thing. It's like, we're going to do this experiment and let me give you some vague instructions and you figure it out yourself. That, you know, failure is not something that we should be afraid of. And that's something I had to learn, because all I could think of was, oh my God, they're going to drop glass and we're going to break everything and they're going to spill this and you know, cut open their whatever. So, but when I kind of let go and let them kind of run things to a certain extent, it becomes more fun for me. And we do have a lot of weird questions, but if I can steer it back to, you know, what we're talking about, sometimes I can't. Sometimes I just have to say, let's leave that there and let's go forward, because ultimately I'm teaching to a test, you know, a state test, which is freaking annoying. Do you also have to state test?
We do for most sciences. There's a few classes like forensics or marine bio that don't have a what's called a regents, but most classes do. Like your main ones like physics, chem, bio, they all have a regents. So as fun as it is to like open the conversation to the kids, a lot of times sometimes I do have to be like, well, if you look that up for me, I'll give you extra credit, and then kind of like get back to it, even because they never do it. So it allows you to kind of get back to the topic.
And most of the time I forget to it is. And the student will come up later like, Mr. Tanner, did you blah blah blah. I was like, when did we talk about that? Like, I don't remember. I hit on these little tangents and I can't remember what it is that I say. But yeah, it ultimately, you know, it's, and that's cool. Like if you read a lot of the research, it talks about, you know, basically letting them have the run of the class. What do they call it? problem-based learning or project-based learning. Mm-hmm. And I really like that. I think it's awesome. I think it's the future. But at the same time, you can't really do that and allow for all these multiple, you know, pathways to find the same answer or whatever, when ultimately what you're going to do is have them take a standardized test. I mean, you can't, it's like, oh, well, the test, you know, they get to choose between this and this. Yeah, but it's, there is an ultimate right answer. So it's like, you can't tell me that, you know, I'm going to reach all of these students and all of their different ways of learning and then force them to sit through a standardized test. That's just, it's an oxymoron with more moron than anything else, because you can't standardize human intellect. You can't let a student, you know, talk about stuff when we go down a rabbit trail, which they're learning as you do that. That has nothing to do with the state test, because then, you know, you got administrators breathing down your neck, and why aren't they performing the way, you know, because the numbers are so important.
Right.
So, but I think that's one thing that, of course, needs to change throughout America, but is unfortunately a lot of the problems here is that we want to see numbers, numbers, numbers. And, you know, what does that actually reflect on the student? A lot of times, not a whole lot. I mean,
right.
there's studies out there that are, you know, relatively recent that say that there are no real, direct correlation between standardized test scores and a student's intellect. There's a lot of variables that go into standardized testing that would not regularly go into, like, a, you know, just a classroom discussion.
Exactly.
So, but anyway, that's my little soapbox. I think my administrator, well, she's gone now, but she used to hate it when we'd have meetings about test data or whatever. I would sit there like the Grinch, you know, and just be like, I don't care about this, blah, blah, blah. So she heard it quite a bit. But I don't think she understood it, but sure, there was, you know, whatever. I'm going to get off this soapbox so I can keep going.
It's okay.
Take over the freaking podcast with the rantings of a underpaid, underappreciated state employee.
No, it's great, because I've gotten asked before, why did we make this show explicit? And it's for interviews like this, where we could talk about some of the myths and things that happen in, you know, Southern communities and science classes. And then we could take a comedic break to talk about whale sperm. And then we get right back into the practical issues with standardized testing. And it's like, did you guys forget we talked about that?
I actually just forgot about the whale thing. So that's, that shows where my brain is.
Honestly, very happy that we had a chance to speak with you today. It was, I mean, as someone who's not a teacher, it was interesting just to hear how different areas look at and view scientific and medical professionals. And I'm sure Lauren really enjoyed this as well.
Definitely. It's always nice to get another perspective. You know, like you said, like sometimes you feel isolated, but, you know, we're all trying to do the same thing here. And it is nice to talk to people elsewhere in the country and see what's working, what's not working, you know, and just the how similar we actually can be and the obstacles we face, even though it may seem like two different worlds, but a lot of the same issues.
Oh yeah. I appreciate it, because to be honest, it always makes me feel better. Like, you know, I'm not just out there, you know, all on my own. Sometimes it feels like that. You know, that's just a Mississippi thing or something, you know, it's something that's pretty common. So yeah, I appreciate it. I enjoyed talking about it. I think the most important part is, yeah, we're all trying to do the same thing. We're trying to help. I mean, I know that, you know, I got into teaching because my experience growing up was so crappy, you know? So I never wanted anybody to experience what I experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And, so I try to kind of keep that in mind. but as much as I can till I get really annoyed. And then it's just like, yeah, whatever, you know, just kidding. All of my administrators that are listening, Mr. Tanner, just kidding.
You guys are all great.
Yeah, you're great. Please don't fire me.
Well, awesome, Tim. Like I said, thank you very much. We really appreciate you joining us today.
I appreciate y'all letting me on.
That's going to do it for us today. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and especially share it. It takes literal seconds to hit subscribe and click the 5-star review button, and it would mean a whole lot to us. Positive ratings and shares on social media are the biggest ways you can help us spread this good science to even more people. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at JustNASScience. You can also visit our website, JustNASScience.com, where you can watch YouTube videos, read blog posts, or submit questions and topics for future episodes.
And don't forget, we put out new episodes every Tuesday. And as always, thanks again for listening.
Later, nerds.
Later, gators.